Okay, folks, I want to welcome you all, please, to a very special edition of Life on Planet Porky. We did not have a Planet Porky podcast last week. Miss Jones and I decided to suspend it for the week to honour our late Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, who, of course, passed away at the end of the previous week. And what a week of mourning that has been. Miss Jones and I now are going to pay our tribute to our Queen. But can I tell you that as we are recording this podcast, the Westminster Hall, where Her Majesty's body has been lying in state for 4 days, has just closed. You won't believe that, but at 6:30 a.m. this morning, Westminster Hall closed. And in just over an hour's time, the Westminster Abbey pews will open to start accommodating the thousands of guests who are attending the funeral, which is going to be the biggest televised event in the history of the world. Such is the interest in our monarchy, and in particular, the late, and in my opinion, very great Queen Elizabeth II, who ruled for 70 years. Miss Jones, a very good morning to you. These are the sort of podcasts you don't want to do, but because of the role that Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II had in our lives, I think it's only proper and fitting that we let our audience who listen to Planet Porky each week know exactly how we've interpreted what's gone on and how we're thinking.
Indeed. Good morning, Mr. Parry.
Yes.
And yes, it's an event we all anticipated. We've known all our lives that this would come one
Yep.
day. What's extraordinary is that they've been preparing for this all our lives as well,
Yes.
because clearly nobody ever had any idea when Her Majesty would die, but they had to be ready for it because it's such a major operation,
Yep.
Operation London Bridge, as it was known. And she personally approved every single detail of her funeral and all the arrangements leading up to
Yeah.
it. So this all has Her Majesty's fingertips on it. We can be sure that every single thing was to her choosing and her liking.
Yeah.
And there's something very comforting about that.
There is indeed the king himself, king of now, of course, is King Charles III, formerly the Prince of Wales, but he became king immediately his mother passed away. The coronation probably won't take place until next year, but he is His Majesty now. So from now on, when we sing the national anthem, it will be God Save the King. He said, didn't he, to somebody just a couple of days afterwards, when somebody was trying to console him, he said exactly what you've just said. This day always had to come, unfortunately. And I think he said that to our great pal Arthur, the son photographer. What's Arthur's surname?
Arthur
Arthur Edwards,
Edwards.
thank you very much indeed, who was brought out of retirement once again to start taking pictures of King Charles, because he'd been taking pictures of him for the last 40 years. They had a bond of understanding. You'll remember how Arthur was always the man on the spot when it was the Prince of Wales and Princess Diana of Diana, Princess of Wales. And so Arthur knew them so well, and felt more relaxed in the company of Arthur Edwards than anybody else. So, you know, that's only a little part of the story. Could you have possibly have queued for 12 or 14 hours, Miss Jones, if you'd have had the time, or if you had the, I don't know, the will to want to do it, to be able to file past the Queen's coffin in Westminster Hall?
It's a very good question. It did cross my mind fleetingly. And then I thought, what a stupid thing to do, really, with no disrespect to everybody who's gone and done it. To queue for, well, up to 24 hours, some people have
Yes.
been waiting in these latest days.
Yes.
It's a lot to ask of people, really, to go and stand in front of what everybody assumes to be the coffin of the Queen with her body inside. We don't really know whether she's there. I don't think paying homage to a box with a flag over it is is really that it has a point, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
My son corrected me. He said, "Mummy, we flew thousands of miles to Egypt to queue up in scorching hot sunshine to go into the tomb of Tutankhamun."
Wow.
And that's absolutely true. We did do that. But he had been dead for, 3,000 years, and it felt slightly different. I do understand people's need to do it or their desire to do it, but it's not something I wanted to do myself.
Okay. Now, I would have liked to have done it. I've been a royalist all my life. I mean, the Queen had just been crowned the year before I was born, and she was with me until last week. You know what I mean? She's been an ever-present part of the whole of my life. So I've listened to some of the accounts of people who've been through the hall, and the serenity, and the stillness, and the quietness, and the majesty, and the awe of the moment. And they can't quite explain it, because some things in life are inexplicable. You know, words fail people. But I would have liked to have done it, but physically I couldn't have done. You know, one of the many ailments I suffer from, unfortunately, is sciatica. Now, if I stand up for more than about 15 minutes, you know, if I'm in a queue somewhere, you know, maybe queuing to get towards a football ground or something like that, I start to feel all the pains down my back and the tops of my legs. So physically I couldn't have done it. But also, I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure I would have had the will. Apparently there was, you know, a great sense of camaraderie in the queue, and you met new friends, and I can understand all that, and I can understand the bonding. And one bloke in the queue I've got enormous respect for, by the way, is David Beckham. Now, some people are, you know, saying it was a cynical plot for him to try and get himself a knighthood. Nevertheless, he did spend 13 hours in the queue, and for about the first 10 of them, he remained secret. What's the word I'm looking for? He
incognito.
Thank you very much indeed. Exactly the word, Miss Jones. No wonder you're a wordsmith. he remained incognito with his flat cap, his Peaky Blinders cap pulled over his head, and his collar turned up. It wasn't until the last couple of sort of 3 hours that he was spotted as David Beckham. I think that was a magnificent gesture.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for him for doing that. He had an invitation to bypass the queue, as did so many. All the great and the good of our industry, for example, all had a sort of queue pass ticket and they could sneak in the side door and jump the queue. I think that's not very British. If you're going to go and do it, you have to do what everybody else is doing. Be one of the people, take your place in the queue and wait like everybody else, whoever you are.
Yeah.
I noticed Theresa May and her husband were there, but they didn't queue up along with the hundreds of thousands outside. I have a lot of respect for David Beckham for what he did.
Yeah.
Quite interesting that he went by himself.
That you know what? That's another point I was going to make to you. Where were his children? He's got four children. One of them appears to have been on honeymoon for about the last 6 months on a boat in the Mediterranean or something. And that's exactly what occurred to me. I thought, why did none of his
children... Where was his wife?
Well, I don't know. I can't answer that one. You'd have thought, really, that there might have been a case for Victoria, i.e. Posh Spice, to have joined him, because they and the royalty were synonymous, weren't they? Certainly with Prince Charles, when he was Prince Charles, now, of course, King Charles.
They were pop royalty, yes. Yeah. I would have expected to see his wife by his side. But, you know, maybe she's not a monarchist or royalist,
maybe.
Who knows? But yes, they were known as Posh and Becks were known as pop royalty. Yeah. So it would have been nice to see her there. But we're not here to criticize anybody.
No.
Everybody's grieving in their own way. Yeah. Some people have likened this outpouring of grief to that we saw when Princess Diana was killed in France. Mm. It's obviously very different. The Princess of Wales was only 36 when she died. That was a great tragedy.
Yeah.
The Queen lived a naturally long life. She was 60 years older than Diana when she died.
Yeah.
And so we have to celebrate her great long life, what she's meant to this country, what she's meant to all of us individually as well. As you pointed out, she's been on the throne since before we were born. Yeah. So we've never known another monarch until now.
That's right. How do you think?
It's as simple as that.
No, I totally agree. How do you think King Charles has performed so far?
I take my hat off to him. Mm. He's a grieving son and he has stepped up. He's done everything right. There's been a lot of focus on the fact that he lost his temper with a pen that wouldn't work properly and that he snarled at courtiers when a little ashtray was in the way when he was trying to sign documents on the day of the acknowledgement of his accession. Yeah. Look, he's under a lot of pressure. I think we would all show little flares of temper and irritation in situations like that. The whole world is watching.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's been very, very impressive so far. I mean, goodness gracious, apart from all the mourning, apart from now being head of the family who've lost their mother, apart from being the new monarch, the new king, apart from having to fly around the realm to Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales, apart from having to appear sometimes two or three times a day in official ceremonies as the Queen's body was moved from Scotland to Windsor and Windsor to Westminster to lie in state, I think he's behaved impeccably. And the other thing which I think is an indication of how it's going to be from now on is a couple of days ago when he was with the new Prince of Wales, formerly Prince William, they were coming out of Windsor in an official car. And with no scheduling whatsoever, the car stopped and they both jumped out and they got back in amongst the crowds. And I think that's a great indication of how the popularity of the monarchy can be enhanced under the new reign. You couldn't have expected the Queen to do that in her last, you know, 20 years. She was an elderly woman. You can't just suddenly leap out of a car. It's much more difficult for a woman getting in out of a car than a man. So I was really impressed with the initiative and the sheer energy that Charles seems to portray, and also the backing he seems to be getting from day one from Prince William, now the new Prince of Wales.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. One thing I have been worried about is the security aspect, because when they get out of their cars and they do go down among the people and so on, none of those people who waited at Windsor Great Park on the Long Walk, for example, or outside Buckingham Palace, they're not having their bags searched. They're not being frisked.
You're absolutely wrong.
There are no checks. Anyone could have a gun, a knife, anything, and lunge for them. And I have been quite worried about that. Yes, there are security guards, but they're not armed, as far as we can see. And all those things happen very, very quickly. We saw that. I always have this running through my mind, the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Indeed.
It happened so quickly, nobody could have done anything about it. And that's, God forbid, that anything like that would happen here. But I have been worried about their safety.
Yeah. Did you ever meet, have you ever met the king?
No, I haven't.
No. I met him.
No, I've been in his presence when the Prince's Trust was a big thing during the 80s and there were lots of rock concerts and so on. So I have been in his presence and Diana, of course, and Diana came to our church, St. Bride's in Fleet Street.
Yeah.
And Camilla, the Queen Consort, is currently still patron of the Guild at St. Bride's as well. Whether that will continue, we'll have to see.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I mean, now
she's going to be very busy now, though, isn't she?
Indeed. I didn't meet Prince Charles. I was the executive editor at the Press Association, and we just moved to new offices in Victoria. And, you know, we wrote way in advance of the new offices opening and all that to see if a member of the royal family could come and do the opening. And Prince Charles came. And you don't get much time with him because he walks around the building and all that. But I had my picture taken with him. But I show it to very few people because I'm bowing so low. I'm not joking, Miss Jones. I have my hands behind my back and I'm bowing almost to my toes, if you see what I mean, you know, to pay or to show my respect for the then Prince of Wales, the heir to the throne. It looks obsequious. I mean, I'm a royal and do respect people in that sort of position, but I bowed too low, so I don't show the picture to anybody because everybody who's ever seen it mocks me for being a grovelling serf.
Oh, well, you know, stuff them, quite frankly. You've got the picture. You know you were there. Yeah. You know you met him.
Yeah.
And even if you keep that picture framed on a wall at your house and you can look at that from time to time and think, yes, you know, look back on that, nobody else needs to see it.
Well, no, maybe you're right. My other connection with royalty is a very tragic one. I was the first reporter on the spot from England to get to Mullagh Moor in 1980, 81, Lord Mountbatten was blown up on his boat off the coast of Southern Ireland, well, just into Southern Ireland from Northern Ireland. And, of course, he was murdered by the IRA. And I was working on the Birmingham Mail in those days, and it was just so fortuitous. The boss there said, get out to Elmden, that's the airport in Birmingham, and get on the first flight to Dublin. I got out there and it was a bank holiday and there was only one flight to Dublin and it went in about 40 minutes time. And I managed to get a ticket, get on it. And of course, Birmingham's much closer to Dublin than London, where all the Fleet Street reporters were coming from. And so I landed, managed to grab a hire car from a lady named Brenda Parry. She worked for The Guardian. And I told them I was Brendan Parry. Took the car under false pretenses.
You cheeky monkey.
Yeah, exactly. Took the car under false pretenses and drove over. It was right on the other side of Ireland, obviously on the west coast, and got there first. And, you know, that's another tragic connection I have with royalty. Hi, everybody. I'm going to brighten up your day by telling you about Harry's. The fantastic shaving experience. They're not just the super sharp razor company. They are much more. And you can start with a trial set that is absolutely free. You just have to pay for delivery. In your trial pack, you get the unique engineered and weighted Harry's handle, a 5-blade cartridge, complete with precision trimmer, foaming shave gel, and a travel blade cover if you're on the move, plus a free hydrating night spray of lotion. Absolutely everything you need for that very smooth shave. Your trial set is packaged in beautiful aquamarine containers that let you know you're in for something special. The weighted handle makes you feel you're holding something more than just a razor. And you are. The trimmer blade makes it so easy to get to those hard to reach places. The foaming shave gel makes the blade skim across your face like a skater on an ice rink. And after a couple of splashes of night lotion, you'll feel your skin positively invigorated and looking healthier. Now, Harry's products are put together with 0% sulfates or dyes and are alcohol-free. Absolutely nothing to cause concern. Everything is crafted by the experts who've devised invigorating formulas, and you will feel the difference no matter what your skincare goals are. Believe me, you're a winner every time. So, folks, make sure to support our podcast, Life on Planet Porky, and start your own skincare journey by redeeming a free Harry's trial set. All you cover is £3.95 for your delivery. So here are the details. Just head to harrys.com/porky and have your trial set and free night lotion delivered to your door. I'll give you that one more time. That's harrys.com/porky. Okay, folks, thank you for joining us today on a special edition of Life on Planet Porky ahead of the state funeral of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, only the second state funeral since the death of Winston Churchill in 1963. There was, of course, Leslie Ann, a state funeral for Her Majesty the Queen's father, after which she inherited the throne. Miss Jones, how impressed have you been with the ceremonials that you've seen so far? I mean, they go all around the world, and honestly, my heart bursts with pride at the way we do these things, and I can't believe that they are so magnificent and so efficient with so little notice. But it goes back to what you said at the start of this podcast. 30 years ago, they started planning for this day. The one that absolutely bowled me over was the day after Her Majesty died. There was a ceremony on Friday evening in St. Paul's Cathedral. And you might remember it for the Lone Piper who walked up the aisle right to the top. And honestly, the organisation and the way that went like clockwork, it so impressed me.
I did watch the service at St. Paul's Cathedral. I was impressed. People have said, well, how there's something fishy here. Somebody wrote on Facebook, actually, there's something fishy going on here. How come everybody was able to drop everything and get there and do it and it all ran so beautifully? And it is only because preparations have been in place for decades.
Yes, that's right.
So that people know when something like this happens or when this happens, because there is nothing else like this, People just know the arrangements. Those involved know what to do. They know what's expected. They turn up and they drop everything else and they do it. Mm. And there is something about the pomp and circumstance of the way we do things. Nobody else in the world does this kind of ceremonial the way the British do it. Yeah. And I think there's a flavour of there'll always be an England. We're safely ensconced in the 1950s. The war is over. All is well in the world. Mm. And we know it's not. Mm. There's a hell of a lot of stuff we're dealing with in the world right now. Mm. But for a moment, we can stop and we can focus on this and on the past and become nostalgic and reflect on all that the Queen has meant to us throughout our lives.
I agree.
And take stock of our lives as well. And sort of wonder, because I think there is something about every funeral. Mm. It makes us pause and think about our own.
Yes, I...
our own mortality, our own expectations, where we've come, what we've done so far, and how we do the rest of our lives going forward. So it does have a deep psychological effect on all of us.
I'm sure it does. Mrs. Thatcher used to get shaken every time she heard about the death of another major politician around the world, you know what I mean? An ex-president of the United States or, you know, an ex-leader of what was then the Russian Federation, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I spoke to people who worked with Mrs. Thatcher and they said she really did consider her own mortality whenever she had to go to one of these, like, you know, state funerals somewhere else and all that kind of stuff. Getting back to the ceremonials, the one that really went through me like a ripple of, you know, shock and awe was when they moved Her Majesty's body from Buckingham Palace. She was brought back to Buckingham Palace from Windsor Castle and then from Buckingham Palace to Westminster Hall. And they did that by marching through the streets, the gun carriage, but the drum beat. I don't know if you remember the ceremony I'm talking about. The drum beat for that short 40 minutes was, it was searing.
It was. And the thing that sticks in my mind, which so many people are going to have picked up on, is the sight of William and Harry walking behind their grandmother's funeral in a reflection of all those years ago when they had to walk behind their own mother's gun carriage, the ceremonial march that went through on the day of her funeral. Yeah. That must have been so hard for them.
Indeed. Oh, no.
And in a way, I wonder whether it was a good idea. Yeah. Should they have been expected to do that? I'm sure nobody made them. Yeah. I'm sure they were invited to and they said yes, willingly, because they are very dutiful. Whatever else people think about the royals, they are dutiful people.
Yes, no.
And they do what's expected of them. But that must have been so difficult for them to do.
I totally and absolutely agree with you. How do you think Liz Truss has performed? And I don't mean politically, that's for another issue, but goodness gracious, you know, she was only made Prime Minister by the Queen 2 days before the Queen sadly died.
She stepped up, didn't she? She performed impeccably.
Yeah, I thought she did. She made great speeches and all that. She led the nation. I think she, like, grew into the job overnight, if you see what I mean. And, of course, she's got a lot more to do now. But I don't know if you saw it. On the day, sadly, when the Queen died, that was a Thursday, there was live coverage from Parliament of something going on there. And all you could see were people scurrying around down towards the government front bench and then over to the opposition. And then people were getting up and leaving. And it reminded me very much of George Bush when he was told that America is under attack on 9/11. Do you remember the guy who had to go up and whisper in his ear, the Twin Towers in New York have been hit by a terrorist attack? And it reminded me of that. So all of a sudden, a matter of great import is, you know, rested with one or two politicians, Liz Truss, and I think the leader of the House, Mr. Lindsay, the Speaker of the House, sorry. And they...
Sir Lindsay Hoyle,
Lindsay Hoyle, well done, thank you. And they had to then carry on with the business of government, knowing that within hours the Queen would be dead, because the message that they'd been given was the Queen is under medical care, it's not a question of days, it's a question of hours. So can you imagine trying to concentrate on business in Parliament when you were holding that secret that only you and one other person in the world knew?
I think they go into overdrive. There is an expectation. That's part of the job, isn't it? That this kind of thing could happen at any moment. And there is an overdrive mentality that we all have when something tragic or unexpected happens.
Yes.
And they are prepared for that to a certain extent. Mm. And I felt that they all stepped up. You know, on the day of that ceremony at St. James's Palace, the official residence of the monarchy, when there was the ceremonial to present Charles as the new king, and Penny Mordaunt ran the show, and she was brilliant.
She was.
I thought she really stepped up and showed her mettle. I really admired her.
Yeah, no, I do as well. The Ascension ceremony you're talking about, and again, it was magnificently performed. A little vignette here, which you'll know more about than I do, Miss Jones, but the coffin, and we both agree that we don't like the word coffin, do we? We prefer a casket, really.
Yes, American it is, but coffin, there's something very ugly and final about that word. Casket is a much more elegant word.
Coffin is a box, isn't it? You think there's somebody in a box, you know what I mean? Whereas casket is, as you quite rightly say, a more elegant presentation of a person's parting from this life to the next, you know what I mean?
Yes, very much so. I couldn't agree more. Interesting about the Queen's casket is that it was made 30 years ago. It's solid oak and lead lined and was made by the same, have to use the phrase, coffin makers as the company who made the coffins for Jimi Hendrix and Freddie Mercury.
Good. You'd have thought there'd been a special, you know, royal coffin maker, wouldn't you? You know, going down through hundreds of years, who dealt with royalty, but not much else. But golly, you know, to share the same coffin maker, as you say, with Jimi Hendrix and Freddie Mercury, it's, you know, the world is a...
At that level, there are only a handful of people who do this kind of thing. And for the same reason, Leverton and Sons of North London are the funeral directors for Her Majesty.
Okay. I tell you, there's one group of people who I've really admired over the last, not just the last week since the, you know, sad demise of the Queen, but before that. The what was the big ceremony for? Oh, yeah, Liz Truss becoming Prime Minister, OK? So Liz Truss had to go up to Scotland. I mean, could she possibly have known on that return flight from Balmoral that 2 days later she would be leading the nation's mourning to celebrate the life of the Queen, who she'd stood with 48 hours earlier? But anyway, that's another thing. So when Liz Truss came back, what we do these days in our businesses, get a helicopter up in the air, don't we, to follow, you know, the procession. In Liz Truss's case, it's the inauguration of a new Prime Minister. In the case of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, it was the cortege bringing the Queen's body back. But at one stage, the Queen was travelling by road from Balmoral up to Aberdeen and then all the way down to Edinburgh through, well, I think nearly 100 miles of perhaps even more Scottish landscape. And the people who I most admired were the police outriders, who, I mean, they had to organise closing roads over a stretch of 100 miles and seal off every junction. And did you see the way that they zipped forward and zipped back? And it was an incredible operation to make sure that the Queen's hearse would never be interrupted on that long route of 100 miles. And I have to say, another magnificent job done by, you know, another agency we can be proud of in this country.
Oh, so impressive. But, you know, what made me a bit baffled, actually, by that whole procedure. Why didn't they just fly her from Balmoral to Aberdeen in a smaller aircraft and then maybe on to Edinburgh and then bring her down to London? Why did it have to be done by hearse over so many hundreds of miles and so many hours? What was the point?
Well, the point was that the people of Scotland were then given the opportunity to pay their last respects as the cortege passed. It, I don't know if you watched it that day, but it went through loads of little villages. So
I did, yeah.
And every time it went through the village, it slowed to walking pace and people were throwing flowers at the hearse and all that kind of stuff. And it was, you've already said that the Queen, you know, crossed the T's and dotted the I's on every single moment of the procedure after she sadly passed away. And she will have wanted that, because we've always been told Balmoral was her favourite place. She had a huge affection for Scotland and the Scottish people. She liked walking in Scotland and picnicking in Scotland. And she wanted the people of Scotland to be able to see her on her final journey. That's what I've always understood. And I'm sure that's what I've read.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
In fact, it was
very grueling, by the way, for the Princess Royal, Princess Anne.
It was.
But didn't she step up? I think she's absolutely marvellous.
Absolutely fantastic. You know, she had to stay in a car for 6 hours. And you just worry about, like, the basic things. Could anybody stay in a car for 6 hours without getting arthritis? Did she not need a bathroom break or something? You know what I mean? I mean, you're...
Well, 6 hours is about the limit, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know this from having driven up and down to Exeter countless times two of my children went to Exeter University,
yeah.
And that is a long drive from London.
Indeed.
It would take about 6 hours door to door, and you can just about do it
mm-hmm.
without the inevitable bathroom break,
yeah.
if you see what I mean.
Yeah, golly, I mean,
as long as you stay off the fluids on the route.
Well, exactly. It's the sort of practical things you think about, isn't it? There was another row. Funny you should say, you know, you were saying why couldn't the body have been flown and all that, but there was another big row about why the body was flown from down from Edinburgh to RAF Norton in West London and wasn't put on the Royal train. That row was initiated really by Peter Hitchens, who is an old colleague of mine who I worked with on the Express for years. But he wrote a piece saying, why not the Royal train? And, you know, quite a momentum built up behind that and said, yes, why not the Royal train? And I tried to find out why not. And the reason is the security implications would have just been too horrendous in this day and age. You know what I mean? If it had to slow down every time it went through a small station, there were so many endless opportunities for things to have gone wrong. I can accept that.
Yeah. What I didn't get was the size of that aircraft. It looked like Thunderbird 2, the most enormous aircraft you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
And the Queen could not have been smaller.
No, I totally
agree. It just seemed a bit of a waste to me.
It's a C-130, I think, an RAF plane, and it spends most of its time shuttling troops around the world, or even tanks. You know, tanks driving to the back of that thing. It's like an aircraft carrier. It's like an aircraft hangar in the sky. Honestly, it's massive. I think it can get 400 or 600 men in the back of it, paratroopers and all that kind of stuff, you know. But, I mean, that was the plane that's most reliable. And that's the one we use. So there we are. Right, folks. Well, this has been a shortened version of a very special Planet Porky podcast for Miss Jones and I to pay our tribute to the Queen, recorded just hours before the ceremonies happened today, the state funeral of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. We resume normal service later on this week, but thank you very much indeed for having joined us today.